啊，喂牛啊耶。
Okay, good evening all. My name's Dean Winter, I'm the Mayor of Kingborough and it's my pleasure to welcome you to this Kingborough Council meeting on Monday the 12th of October 2020. It's 5:30pm and so I formally declare the meeting open. We welcome councillors and staff who are here but also our Facebook audience and community members who are watching through the live stream. It's great to have you with us. More than ever are joining us and we love that you're able to follow along with what we do here. My first formal job is to let everyone know that this meeting is not only recorded live on Facebook but it's also kept and the audio is available on our website. So if you ever want to go back to a meeting and listen to what was said, you can do so through the kingborough.tas.gov.au website. And the General Manager's confirmed that the audio recording has commenced. And so we'll move on now to the acknowledgement of traditional owners. And at the start of every meeting, we pay our respects, our Kingborough Council's respect to the traditional and original owners of this land, the Muwinina people. We acknowledge the contemporary Tasmanian Aboriginal community who have survived invasion and dispossession and continued to maintain and fight for their identity, culture and Indigenous rights. Attendees this evening, we have myself, Councillor Winter, we have Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Grace, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street and Councillor Reet. From our staff, we have our General Manager, Gary Arnold, Deputy General Manager, Tony Ferrier, our Executive Manager of Engineering Services, David Reeve, our Executive Manager of Governance and Community Services, Daniel Smee, Manager of Development Services, Tasha Tyler-Moore, our Strategic Planner is Adrienne Stander, our Communications and Engagement Advisor is Sarah Wilcox, and our Executive Assistant is Amanda Morton. Those watching on our live stream, I've just been passed a note to say that there is a sound issue. Of course, if there's a sound issue, you probably can't hear me saying this. So we'll put a comment up to let people know. Obviously, that's not intentional, and if that's the case, we'll make sure that it's that the audio is obviously also on our website. Apologies this evening. We have on a leave of absence Councillor Wass. Next item is the confirmation of minutes. So there's a recommended motion on page one that says that the minutes of the open session of council meeting number 18 held on the 28th of September 2020 be confirmed as a true record.
So moved.
Moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Bastone. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Workshops held since the last council meeting. There have been no workshops held since the last council meeting, although just for the public record, council has had a discussion with the Minister for Housing, Minister Roger Yench, last Monday in relation to Hunting Field. And I understand community members also met with him and his department at Northwest Bay during that week. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest to declare in tonight's meeting? There aren't any, so I'll move on to the transfer of agenda items. Does any councillor wish to transfer an agenda item? Again, there are none. We move to questions without notice from the public. As I've been saying every week during COVID, that we're still unable to accommodate members of the public within the COVID restrictions in the room. Which means we can't take questions without notice from the public, but what you can do is write an email to kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au and direct your email as a question on notice, and that will mean that it will go on the next agenda. And there's some examples of that in the next item, which is questions on notice from the public, where we have three members of the public who have put questions on notice. First is from Mr. David Bain, which is in relation to Whitewater Park and Spring Farm. The second is on dog complaints from Ms. Quinn Liu. And on page three, we also have a question on notice about the closure of James Lane from Mr. Jeremy Day with a response as well. So we now move on to questions without notice from councillors. Did any councillor have a question Start with Councillor Grace and then Councillor Cordova. Councillor Grace.
My first question you may pull me up on, because it's something I've been asked by the public to relay to this council. Their thanks and appreciation, the business people in Snug, Thursday, when the sealed road was done in Beach Road, and congratulate council. They're very pleased with the works, including myself. Mayor, I actually stood and watched some of that. Now back to business. But I've been asked to pass that on, and it has certainly made the entrance into the community home much better. Right. My question is, the oversight, governance and accountability from the Kingborough Ratepayers Association that all councillors got a copy of. Could I ask, will this come to council in a full report, and when?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Grace, the Mayor has kindly provided me with a copy, and I will endeavour to get a report to the next council meeting.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, so next I have Councillor Cordova, then I have Councillor Reet, then Councillor Bastone. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is about single-use plastic. My question is, the government's Recycling and Waste Reduction Bill 2020 is currently working its way through federal parliament, and the bill establishes a framework to regulate the export of waste materials in line with an agreement to ban the export of waste plastic, paper, glass and tyres by the Council of Australian Governments in 2020, manage the environmental health and safety impacts of products, and in particular those impacts associated with the disposal of products, and provide voluntary, co-regulatory and mandatory product stewardship schemes. My question is, has our council taken any steps towards helping local businesses to prepare for the potential phase-out and ban of the 10 most problematic single-use plastics found in marine life and in the ocean, in line with steps taken in the EU to end the use of harmful single-use plastic? This is things like lightweight carrier bags, microbeads, six-pack plastic ring holders, cotton buds, balloon sticks, straw stirrers, cutlery, non-compostable or recyclable plates, bowls and other dishes, polystyrene and food beverage containers.
I know this question goes across a few areas. Mr. Reeve or Mr. Smee,
Through you, Mayor. Yes, there's a lot of stuff that's actually happening in this space at the moment, and you'd be aware of the work that's been done at the state government level as well with the Draft Waste Action Management Plan, which is starting to get some traction now as well at the same time. So what we think is there will be some actions that will certainly come out of that process there that will look at single-use plastics in particular, and how councils and other organisations might be involved in actually assisting in that space as well at the same time. So it's a little bit of a wait and see at this stage there, but it is something that we know that we will have an active role to play going forward.
Sorry, one further question on that. Thank you very much for that answer, and it is indeed very exciting. Through you, Mayor, what are some examples of what we might do to help facilitate businesses to make that change?
Mr. Reeve.
You may, through our own waste management strategy there, you'll note that there's a number of things that look at education. There's education at lots of different levels, if you like, so it's not just about schools and the general community there, but it's also about business as well at the same time there. So I would suspect that we will take the lead from the state government in terms of how we would be involved as a council there, and then we'd use the processes we have at the moment there to actually then go through a similar type of educational support process with businesses, particularly with some of the smaller businesses there that may not be necessarily in the position to, I guess, enact some of these things themselves. So that's where council, I think, can actually take a more of a lead role for those particular businesses.
Councillor Reet.
Thank you. My question is to the General Manager. General Manager, I wrote to you on the 14th of September in relation to Council's customer complaints policy. I didn't receive a response. I followed up with a further email to you on the 22nd of September. Sorry, I'll start that again. I wrote to you on the 14th of September this year in relation to Council's customer complaints policy. I followed up with a further email to you on the 22nd of September, and I followed up with a further email to you this morning. To date, some 4 weeks later, I haven't received a response or even an acknowledgement to my email, and I'm wondering if I could ask the General Manager when I might expect a response.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Reid, I don't recall receiving any of those emails, so I will follow that up with our IT department.
Yeah. They're certainly showing as sent from my end, and I did copy in my fellow councillors as well, and I know that they received them. So if you could follow that up, I'd appreciate it.
Councillor Bastone and then Councillor Midgley. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you. 2 weeks ago at 7:15am on a Sunday morning, a contractor employed by the council started to core the Woodbridge Oval in preparation for the cricket season, which woke up everybody in the area. When the residents rang the council on Monday morning to complain, they were told that the council was not obliged to abide by the EPA noise regulations. Is this correct?
It's just me.
Through you, Mayor, the oval does, and the work undertaken by council on the oval is not subject to the normal residential noise requirements. But whether that means it doesn't come under the EPA definition of a nuisance, that I'm not sure. But I know that the standard residential requirements with respect to use of machinery don't apply within the zone that the oval is in.
Thank you. And my second question is, when can we expect the new Conyngham toilets to be open? They're looking very splendid, and the landscaping is all done. I'm just hoping it's imminent.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, it's imminent. I can't give you an exact date at this stage there, but it will be very shortly.
Very exciting. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. My first question relates to something in the appendix regarding the GM diary, 22nd of September, Christian schools traffic issues. If I could please have some understanding regarding that.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Midgley, that discussion was in relation to a near miss involving a young student at Kelvin, and I was joined at that meeting by my colleague Mr. Reeve, and I understand that he will be looking at what options might be available to address that occurrence.
Thank you, General Manager. Second question in regards to the Ride to Work Day initiative, and wondering at all if Council is taking any initiatives in regards to this with staff.
General Manager, or?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Midgley, I must confess that I'm not personally aware of the day that it occurs, and I expect that it's probably come up in the Bicycle Advisory Committee, but other than that, I can't help you as we speak.
That's okay. I can forward some information if staff are interested. We're all trying to move towards getting out of our cars and onto bikes, so it's a great thing to take part of. Question in regards to the hunting field. I'm wondering if council staff have received any background information or technical reports for the hunting field master plan. I understand they were waiting on this information. Just wondering where that's at.
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor. No, we haven't received any detailed reports. Anything further from what is at the community forums?
Thank you. Just a further question onto that. As part of the development application, will they be submitting, or should they be submitting, technical reports and background information?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, it's our expectation that they would. If they don't, then it's likely we would request that as further information request standard for any planning application that we deal with. We need to have the information available to us to be able to make a proper decision.
Thank you. After reading the acknowledgement to traditional owners item on the agenda, it prompted a question that I asked last year, and I cannot recall if it was at a council meeting or just an email. It was in regards to, did we purchase an Aboriginal flag for citizenship ceremonies?
We might take it on notice.
Thank you. I did provide staff with the costings and where to source them from, and I was aware that we were going to purchase that. Also, I'm wondering if staff or management undertake any training with the Tasmanian Aboriginal Corporation, the cultural awareness training.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Midgley, I'm not aware that we have in recent times.
Thank you. Is that something that we would perhaps consider for the future? I think it's around $200 per staff to participate.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, happy to look into that.
Councillor Gordo.
Thank you, Mayor. My next question is about Main Road Alona and the property that Council has advertised its intention to sell. So I've got three separate questions on this. The first question is about what is the process now? According to Section 178 of the Local Government Act, does it need to be re-advertised in a newspaper? Or what does the process look like from here?
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor. We've advertised our intent in a newspaper. The process now is for Council to assess the submissions received, consider the merits of those submissions received, and make a decision as to whether it wishes to proceed with the sale or otherwise. Any person having made a submission is then entitled to a right of appeal through the provisions of the Local Government Act.
Thank you. And what kind of time frame are we looking at for that?
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor, it's our intention to provide a report to the next council meeting on this matter. However, that will be subject to being able to meet the deadline of the agenda, which is closing this week. So it just depends whether we get there or not.
Thank you. My next question on that is about the zoning. The current zoning is residential. Was there ever a different zoning or a change of zoning for that particular piece of land?
I'm going to guess we're going to take that on notice. Mr. Smee?
Through you, Mayor. My understanding is it's always been zoned residential. I haven't been able to find any information to the contrary.
Thank you. And my final question on that is it says that it was considered for sale in 2002. However, Council received considerable negative resident feedback. And it's worth noting that there's considerable resident negative feedback again. And so sale did not proceed. So I was just hoping, does anybody recall the details of that situation in 2002?
So in a response to Councillor Grace's request, Ms Morton has provided the minutes of that meeting and be happy to forward that to you as well. They are public minutes. And I'd also suggest offline you could talk to Councillor Grace or Councillor Fox, who were both in the room at the time.
Great, thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
I also have a question regarding the land sale. We have received quite a number of emails in regards to the various properties across Kingborough, and one of the comments, or some of the comments from people, either via email or just generally talking, is the lack of a letter surrounding to the residents, and I understand that that was not part of the requirement. But also people have asked why wasn't it advertised on the Council Facebook page? So many other matters are promoted there, but this one wasn't.
I'm not sure if that's correct. Certainly was advertised on my, as the Mayor, I advertised it and the media release, which was on our website. So we put a media release out on our website. I certainly provided a link through my social media, answered somewhere close to 20 or 30 comments, dealt with all the questions. So it certainly has been on social media. There was a lot of interest in that. We also sent a media release to the Mercury, which is our biggest, that's probably the best and broadest way to communicate with people. We also did media in the ABC. So I think we're very proactive, and probably the reason why I've got so many emails is because I think we have communicated the intention pretty well. I think in hindsight, I probably would have sent the media release to the Bruny Island News, which was an oversight on my behalf, but apart from that, I think we've communicated pretty well. Any further questions without notice? In that case, we'll move on to the questions on notice from councillors. The first is on COVID-safe evacuation centres from Councillor Cordova. The second is on Villa Howden from myself. That's on page 5. And with that, the open session is adjourned and the planning authority will commence at 5:50 p.m. The first item is the proposed amendment to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015, PSA 2019-3, former Kingston High School site-specific area plan, and there's a recommended motion on page 18. Just for those watching at home, though, the recommendation has changed slightly, only slightly. Is that what's on the screen now, Ms. Morton? We're actually going to ask councillors to move a slightly amended motion, just so that we are super confident that we are meeting the requirements of the Act. It just adds an additional point. Would anyone like to move that recommended motion that's on screen? Councillor Westwood. Anyone like to second it? Councillor Fox. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. The report we have in front of us tonight is a summary of a report that we've already seen with some amendments made by the Tasmanian Planning Commission to the proposed planning scheme amendment. We're referring to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015, the former Kingston High School site. This came to council a while ago. We went out and asked the public for some comments. We compiled that feedback and sent it to the Tasmanian Planning Commission. The Commission has now come back with some amendments to the version that we sent through to them. There are 8 main amendments or changes made by the Tasmanian Planning Commission. 6 of those are supported, and 2 of those, we have some additional comments around the deletion of the provisions being unfortunate. However, for example, with housing diversity, it is acknowledged that there are other ways future development in the precinct will achieve housing diversity. The other one relates to environmental considerations. It is unfortunate that the environmental provisions have been deleted. While some of the high conservation value trees along the western boundary of the precinct have been approved for removal as part of the existing DA, there remain numerous high value conservation trees and other environmental values within the precinct. So these are changes that have been requested by the Planning Commission. Because some of them were substantial, we were required to go out again to the community to consult, which we have now done, and it is recommended by staff that we note the representations together with the planning staff's response, that the Planning Commission be advised that Council is not recommending any further modifications to the amendment as a result of the representations that were received, and that pursuant to Section 39(2)(a) of the former provisions of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993, Council forward a copy of this report and the representations to the Tasmanian Planning Commission.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I do support this motion. I just have a couple of questions. First one is in regards to the housing diversity. I note, as Deputy Mayor Westwood said, the deletion of the housing diversity provisions is unfortunate, but there are precedents in place to ensure that we do have the housing diversity, and also in regards to the contract with Traders in Purple. I guess I just want to be rest assured that the housing diversity will be upheld and considered by Traders in Purple, and what sort of statements, I guess, relating to that are in their contract, so we can be assured.
Ms. Tyler Moore or Mr. Stander?
Oh, light on. Sorry about that. Through you, Chair, I think this is most probably a question for Mr. Ferrier. It relates to the contract itself, not necessarily the planning matter.
If that's the case, given we are dealing with a planning issue as opposed to being the owner, I'd probably suspect we should stick to the planning matters.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor. But I from the outset, that we can be rest assured that housing diversity will be upheld in regards to... That is a planning matter. I understand it's been taken out, but I'm... It's...
So the question is, what ability through the planning scheme do we have to ensure that there's housing diversity?
Yes, thank you, Mayor.
Mr. Stander or Ms. Tylermore? Mr. Stander.
No, that's fine. I'll answer that question. There's some approvals in place already for the site, so if you look what council already approved on our site, it will allow for a variety of different housing types. I think the commission is also coming from the background that the development in itself will provide a different mix of development in the municipality. So just by approving this development that's already provided, as mentioned before, there is a contract in place between council and the developer, which also provides certain requirements in terms of housing diversity through the approved documentation.
Thank you. And a question regarding the environmental considerations. Can I please have some more understanding in regards to why these provisions have been deleted by the TPC?
Mr. Stander.
Through you, Mr. Chair. Unfortunately, the Commission and the process doesn't allow the Commission to provide us with reasons for that. So in the report, you'll see I've made some comments in terms of what Council previously presented to the Commission. My comments, as you can see, it's unfortunate that those requirements have been removed. However, it should be noted that some of the trees on the site's already been removed. And our biggest concern is really just as the planning scheme, as we go over to the new LPS, that those provisions will be lost. But as mentioned in the report, there's another opportunity for council to try and capture some of those provisions through the translation process.
Sorry, I didn't catch that last word. Through the what process?
Translation? Just translation.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is also on the housing diversity, and in the comment and response saying that we're going to have 400 new dwellings, it goes on, and then it says the rest will be a mix between townhouses, small lot homes and aged care housing, and yet I thought when we had a meeting with Traders in Purple recently, they said there would be no aged care housing.
They did.
Again, it's sort of relating to a question the council would answer as the landowner rather than as the planning authority in this case. So I'm not... did either of the planners have a response? Ms. Tylermore?
Through you, Mayor. We haven't, as the planning authority, we haven't received correspondence about the change and proposal of an aged care facility. It hasn't been applied for it. Something was talked about. But those background conversations aren't something that come through planning directly, so they haven't approached us to say we are or aren't doing it, so we've got no comment about the question of diversity of that, but I understand where you're coming from.
Councillor Grace.
A little bit lost with it, actually, to be quite honest, is the fact that the criteria to date is the commission... once the Commission receives the 39 report, the S39 report from Council, it may convene a hearing to assist. Does that mean, what are they meaning that, or this report, if it's gone to the plan, where I'm lost, it went to the planning appeals, right? I sort of thought this was their response back, which it is it partly, isn't it?
I'll explain what's happened, is that the TPC has made changes which are substantial enough for them to believe that it was appropriate for them to advertise and ask for feedback from the community about those changes. So the changes they made were substantial enough for them to do that. So what we're considering now is the three submissions that we received, and the motion in front of us would just simply send this report and those pieces of feedback back to the Planning Commission.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying here.
So they're saying it could have a second hearing.
So they'll go for a second hearing?
They could choose to have a second hearing if they wanted to.
Okay, that clears the issue. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, there. Councillor Cordover.
Thanks very much, Mayor. My question is just about, and you could tell me if it's not related to planning, but we've heard a little bit about housing diversity and how that was related to planning. Tasmania's Affordable Housing Action Plan 2019 to 2023 talks a lot about new supply. My question is, was there ever any mention of affordability when it came to these 400 new lots, and is that something that's covered in planning at all?
Mr. Standard or Ms. Tollemore?
Through you, Mayor, planning application comes in on its own as a development as opposed to the planning scheme amendment. No, there's no trigger in the planning scheme that considers affordability, housing diversity or type of housing.
So I guess just to make that crystal clear, that there is, not only is there no trigger in the planning scheme about affordability, but explicitly with the Kingston Park development, there is no illusion to the requirement for any kind of affordability within the new development. That's not even on the cards.
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, it would be up to the developer to choose if they wanted to offer that as part of their product suite, but it's not something that we could require. Not as a planning authority. The contract between council and the developer is a different matter, but not one for me to comment on.
Sure thing. My second question, if you will, please, Mayor, is about height limits. And just to step us through the changes in height limits, and I guess the thrust of this is really just to allay any concerns or fears within the community about why it is that they're changing. So could you step us through the justification for the change in height limits?
Mr. Stander.
Through you, Mr. Chair, I might just mention that this report is really just trying to deal with the representations, but I've also included in the report on pages 9 to 11 just a bit of background on some of the changes that the Commission made. So you'll note there's a couple of things, and including the height. It's kind of a little bit convoluted, some of the height issues, but you'll note that there's a provision currently in the planning scheme that is trying to look at the height of adjoining development in the central business zone. So the Commission has increased the height on that, and that's really just to look at the existing properties of Channel Highway to improve the development potential. There were also some changes in relation to the setbacks. So you'll note, and that's actually more a matter that was raised during the submissions, is setbacks and height requirements, and once again, how it would affect the development potential on adjoining land. So you'll note in the comments there is some provisions within the planning scheme where, I guess, a height increase could be considered through those provisions.
Thank you. And further to that, then, could you please step us through the idea about solar access and how, will there be a risk that increased height limits will limit people's solar access and issues of overshadowing and things like that? Can you just step us through the theory behind it?
Through your chair. In this particular instance, it's actually quite simple because the properties within a commercial zone is located to the south of development. So given that there's already a site development or master plan approved for the inner residential zone, we've already established that there would be no impact to the properties to the south. Obviously, if the developer would come back with a new design, we will have to reconsider those potential impacts, and council have the opportunity to ask for additional info as part of that development application process.
Just a question. Just to clarify, I'm unclear is the fact that if we look at B, recommendation B, pursue section 39(2) of the former provision of the Land Planning Approvals Act, forward it to the Tasmania Planning Commission, that's fine. But can the planning department now rubber stamp and say, finish, we're not going back out to any more consultation, I'll approve it as it is, or this is just... I just find it hard to sort of find out. My question is, what this report really is telling the planning that they don't already know?
So all this, we're required under the Act to send the submissions we received. We're just a mailbox here. We're sending the submissions we've received back to the Tasmanian Planning Commission, the second lot of consultation, and they then make a decision. They could presumably decide they were going to change it substantially enough to go back out again. Certainly hope not. But that's where we're at the moment.
So they're only dealing with the submissions?
Yes, they're only dealing with submissions. I'm getting nods from behind you. Okay, there are no... Oh, Councillor Bastone.
Sorry, I just have one more question, and I'm not sure if it's relevant or not, and I'm sure you'll tell me if it's not. In the interim planning scheme, the draft amendment, on page 29, the urban mixed-use zoned land, they've crossed out that the utilities need to be located underground. Why would they do that? I mean, surely we should be looking for the best possible outcome and not needing utilities above ground.
Mr. Stander.
All three, Mr. Chair, I might try and answer that question. I just want to have a look at that section.
Page 29.
Without looking at it, I think that is potentially a standard requirement. And my guess would be that it generally refers to your service like sewer and so forth. So I'm not quite sure in terms of this, and I might have to take that on notice. I might have to take that one on notice if you don't mind.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
The way I read it was that it's setting out what no permit required is in relation to, and as opposed to utilities being no permit required if located underground, it's saying that no permit's required for mining utilities irrespective of whether they're underground or above ground. Okay, now the lights are on, so I'm going to ask Councillor Westwood to sum up if she'd like. No. So the motion is, particularly for those at home, that it's very slightly different to what's printed in the agenda. It's moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Fox, and it's the Council resolves that A, Council notes the representations to PSA 2019-3 together with Council officers' responses. B, the Tasmanian Planning Commission be advised that Council is not recommending any further modifications to the amendment as a result of representations received. And C, pursuant to Section 39(2)(a) of the former provisions of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993, Council forward a copy of this report and the representations to the Tasmanian Planning Commission. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? We'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Street, Bastone, Reet, Westwood, Fox, Cordova, Midgley and Winter. And those against is Councillor Grace. The motion is carried. The next item on the agenda has been withdrawn at the request of the applicant. And so with that, that means that the planning authority session is adjourned and the open session of council will resume at 6:08 p.m. The next item is motions of which notice has been given. At the time the agenda was compiled, no notices of motion had been received. 162, sorry, Councillor Grace. Also on page 162 is the petition still being actioned. There's a petition headed unisex bathrooms for schools and public facilities, and that will be tabled at a future council meeting. The response to it will be. Next item is petitions received in the last period, and at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received, though for those many people would be aware that we have received some petitions in relation, or a petition in relation to the land sales in Bruni, but that was after the the agenda was compiled. The next item is the officers' reports to council, and that is the draft bushfire mitigation bill, and there's a recommendation on page 166. Would anyone like to move or second that? Councillor Grace, seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Grace.
It's the resolve to prevent the LGAT with a submission to inform the LGM of the sexual response to the bill. That's all we're doing at this stage. And I take it this is the bill from... I don't know, it goes on and on and on. It's quite a lengthy document, Mayor.
Thanks, Councillor Grace. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor.
Then Councillor Fox, then Councillor Westwood.
I recall at the last meeting I did make note, if I forget the item that was on the agenda, but it was related to this topic, and I did ask if Council was having any input into this, so it's great that it's come before us, and it's for the people at home. The purpose of this report is to advise councillors that the submission into the draft Bushfire Mitigation Measures Bill 2020, the bill are invited and closed on the 23rd of October 2020, so we're being advised that staff will be putting in a submission, but my question in regards to that is, will councillors perhaps see that submission? Is there any relation to the policy that we approved similar to this matter in the last meeting? Just wondering, any staff comments regarding that, please, Mayor.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. This bill is about the establishment of a statewide mechanism in relation to bushfire mitigation, and it's about setting up an authority to which people would apply to get approval to do bushfire mitigation measures, vegetation clearing, etc. So the only link with the policy that was approved at the last council meeting, which is specifically about council's procedures with respect to the issuing of abatement notices on private land. So it's a related topic, but to be honest, this bill has little impact on our own compliance measures. It's got some broad environmental implications. It's got some implications with respect to insurance. It's got some implications with respect to costs to community members. But the link in terms of how we will go about our fire hazard abatement processes, it won't have a great impact, in essence. To answer your other question about will councillors get to see a copy of the submission, I'd certainly be happy to provide councillors with a copy once we have drafted that.
Thank you very much for the understanding, Mr. Smee. I just also note that under the risk on page 165, it states if the bill proceeds as currently written, the potential exists for the character of Kingborough Municipality to be changed forever. The bill has the potential, through mandating vegetation removal modification on a landscape scale, to change the character of the municipality, resulting in the loss of natural, cultural and scenic values. So, yes, it would be interesting to see officers' response in regards to some of these risks that are stated.
Councillor Fox.
I appreciate the answers I've received from Mr. Smee and also the questions and comments from Councillor Midgley. And I'm particularly concerned that the panel would provide the Secretary, made up of the Secretary of the Department of Police, Fire and Emergency Management or their delegate, the Secretary of the Department of Premier and Cabinet or their delegate, the Director of the Environmental Protection Authority,
and a representative nominated by the local government association and an expert nominated by the minister. So I don't see in this list of experts that there are any legal representatives that would be part of this. I'm very concerned about the fact that the fact that there will be so much pressure on the community to provide fire mitigation and report to a panel, and particularly council that owns so much land in the municipality, they will have to provide reports and fire mitigation measures, etc., which would come at a huge cost to council. And my concern is that the focus of this group is not going to be on the environment, but on the fact that a lot of vegetation is potentially going to be set on fire, not only to the detriment of the environment, but also to the detriment of our air quality. And we've just basically reduced a lot of that burning off and by the Forestry Department, and now this seems like another way of providing pollution to our community, and that's the last thing that we want. And I'm also very concerned that it is so overarching with no appeal rights. I think it's quite a sinister proposal, and I'm really looking forward to a very thoroughly researched and strongly worded report to the LGAT. Thank you.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. My questions were around resourcing issues for Council, and Mr. Smee's adequately answered those for me. Thank you, Mr. Smee.
Councillor Cordova.
Thanks very much, Mayor. My first question is, have we engaged or will we be engaging before presenting the submission with experts in the field, for example, Professor David Bowman from the University of Tasmania?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, we will endeavour to engage with experts as necessary to compile our response within the time frame that's available.
Thanks very much. So, for my two cents on this, I have been in communication with people like Peter Robertson and Owen Price. These are bushfire experts who recognise that ultimately, as a result of anthropogenic climate change, as the exposure draft here, the explanatory paper expresses, we are seeing more and more extreme bushfire events. And so it's going to be very important that we reflect a scientific, evidence-based, data-driven approach, and that we recognise that, for example, Chris Taylor and David Lindemeyer, two researchers, have done extensive reports on the links between, for example, forestry and fire intensity, and also the effects of climate change on increasing bushfire severity. As a result of that, we can't just do a piecemeal approach, and we actually need to use the data and the evidence. And so from the Emergency Leaders for Climate Action 2020, the recommendations were to set up immediately a National Climate Disaster Fund to meet climate-fueled disaster costs and build resilience, paid through a fossil fuel producer levy, develop and implement a national climate change health and wellbeing strategy, and finally tackle climate change and worsening extreme weather by urgently phasing out fossil fuels. And I'm not saying that we can do that here on the council on our own, but I think in our submission we need to reflect that urgency. I also think that we need to be working with nature organisations, traditional owners, scientists and landowners and managers to restore ecosystem health, resilience and natural fire retardant attributes. That includes canopy and moisture retention. It includes improving provision for having digging animals and fungi that actually reduce fire risk. And it includes protecting fire-sensitive ecological communities and species. So I would like to see some of this evidence and some of this approach, recognising the effects of climate change within our submission. I also want to point out that, for example, when we do hazard reduction burns on Bruni and then we get 3 days of warnings that for anybody with asthma they should go inside, we realise, as Councillor Fox alluded to, that actually we're reducing a lot of carbon emissions while we're burning, but we're also providing a hazard for people who have respiratory issues already. So For those 3 days where people should go inside, if you calculate the size of the summer bushfires last year, it was an area the size of Kenya that burnt in these national crises. Now, to hazard reduction burn an area that size, we'd need to burn consecutively for about 11 years. So there's no way that simply by a hazard reduction burn approach we can achieve what we're trying to achieve, which is resilience, bushfire readiness and climate action. So I just want to point out what the experts talk about when they say our short-term focus should be shifting the focus away from large-scale prescribed burning to a combination of localised science-based hazard reduction and risk minimisation plans and a nationwide investment in early detection and rapid suppression, which they refer to as at-source suppression and ignition management. So an example that they use is in November 2015, the Cascade Fire near Esperance on the southwest of WA. It smouldered for 2 days. It could have been put out by a single volunteer brigade using hoses, but because agencies wouldn't send on-ground teams or fire bombers, it then took off. For 3 days it smouldered, and then it ended up getting out of control and it burnt approximately 120,000 hectares of bush and farmland, and it killed 4 people. So that's why it is so crucial that we need to be looking a shift away from large-scale hazard reduction prescribed burns and towards nationwide investment in early detection and rapid suppression. So I would like to see some of those issues reflected in our submission, particularly localised science-based hazard reduction and risk minimisation plans, and working with nature organisations, traditional owners, scientists and landowners and managers to restore our ecosystem health, resilience and natural fire retardant attributes. Thank you.
Okay, there are no other lights on at this stage. To sum up, Councillor Grace.
I think, Mayor, to be quite frank, if you look at page 183, have your say, I believe there will be quite an input into this document. One would be, okay, environment. The environment, as we know, is important, but lives are more important, and I would imagine this panel will sit and look at that. I mean, I don't know, I know how many of you people went through 1967 bushfires. I can tell you now, you can't outrun it. So you've got no hope. But this is a start. This is probably the most interesting thing when I look at it more that we've had since 1967. To be quite frank with you, it is, because it's going to give us a feedback. And will we go back and put fire breaks in? It will give all sorts of options, and this is something that we drastically need to do. Anything I can't see, but I guess we can do this, have your say, is the fact, like, isolated areas, how long it takes to get back up. That's important, and particularly Bruny Island. If a fire starts on Bruny Island, the time it takes to get back up, if it's not called for immediately, you know, can take to the next day. That is one of the issues that we should be writing in our submission. How can we improve that?
Thank you, Councillor Grace. So the motion was moved by Councillor Grace and seconded by Councillor Midgley, and it's that Council resolve to provide LGAT with a submission to inform the LGAT sectoral response to the bill. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, it's me. We'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillors Grace, Street, Bastone, Reet, Westwood, Fox, Cordova, Midgley, and against is Councillor Winter. The motion is carried. Next item is Sealed Plan 171047, affecting land at 361 Redwood Road. And the recommended motion is on page 185.
So moved.
Moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Reet. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. As the report states, pursuant to a decision that Council made on the 24th of August 2020, we have been requested by the applicant in that instance for a statement of reasons under the Judicial Review Act. The recommended motion sets out Council's proposed statement of reasons. Those statements of reasons reflect the broad reasoning of Council, I believe. And otherwise, the individual reasoning of councillors is available in the audio from our meeting on the 24th of August, insofar as the reasoning of individual councillors may differ. On that basis, I commend the motion to council.
Thanks, Councillor Street. There's no further lights on, so the motion was moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Reid, and so the council resolved to provide the following statement of reasons for refusing to amend seal plan number 101047 by deleting the covenants in relation to lot 96 because, one, the sealed plan was only recently registered, two, there has been no substantial change to the nature or use of the area and surrounding the sealed plan since its registration, three, there is at least one registered proprietor that benefits from the covenants in the sealed plan objecting to the amendment, and four, in these circumstances, the amendment should be rejected. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? We'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Street, Bastone, Reid, Westwood, Fox, Cordova, Midgley, Winter, and those against, Councillor Grace. Motion is carried. Next item we go to is the waste and recycling curbside extension to Tinderbox. There's a recommendation on page 188. Councillor Grace, seconded by Councillor Fox.
I don't need to speak much on this. It's just a straight out. We're not going to extend the services.
Councillor Street. Then Councillor Reid. Sorry, I should wrong way. Councillor Street, then Councillor Reid.
I got the jump on you. Just a quick question to start off with. What do we envisage the cost would be of surveying the 197 residents if we chose to do that?
Mr. Reid.
It's predominantly just staff costs there, so it'll be just a matter of sending out the letters. So the cost of the letters there's about 197 residents, I think, that would have to be sent out to, and then the staff time in terms of evaluating that as well. So that would be done internally. So I couldn't give an exact cost associated with that part.
Yeah. Look, I'm inclined to vote against this motion. The reason that I say that, I understand that the petition only had six signatures and there's 197 tenements that we're talking about here. I'm sure that Tinderbox would be a very difficult place to petition like that. Obviously, the tenements do have some distance between them. I don't think it would be easy to do. I don't think that it's necessarily an accurate reflection of the interest within the community. And on the basis that there's only 197 tenements, I would be inclined, if this motion is lost, to go ahead and do the survey and see whether they want it. They're certainly not the only area similar to Tinderbox that we do collect waste and recycling from. And so I see no harm in surveying the residents, especially when it is a low number and it is directly adjacent to two areas that we already collect waste and recycling from, to let them have a say on whether we should continue that collection service down the road. So I foreshadow that if this is lost, I will move a motion requesting that the residents be surveyed.
Councillor Reid, then Councillor Westwood. Councillor Reid.
Thank you. I don't disagree with what Councillor Street has just suggested. I just had a question just to clarify something. It says in 2.2 that there were two petitions received and the second petition dated the 30th of September had zero signatories. So how can a petition be valid if nobody has actually endorsed what the petition says? Because I would have thought if that was the case, then that you could... There could be a whole flood of vexatious petitions that come to us that we are then bound to respond to that are not valid because nobody's actually put a signature to them. I'm not trying to give any ratepayers that idea that might be a good idea to
yes.
do it. but could somebody shed some light on that? Because I was
Who
intrigued.
Does? Who wants to shed the light? Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, a petition would need a signature to be valid. I think in this instance,
it's been noted that there was a second piece of correspondence that came in the form of a petition, but we haven't acted on it in accordance with the Act as a petition, but it's been noted that there's been a second piece of correspondence received, but you're correct, it does need a signatory.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just checking.
Councillor Westwood, then Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I would be interested in surveying the 197 tenements. I'm aware that some of the driveways are quite long. Their tinderbox doesn't have a curbside. It probably would be difficult to collect curbside collection for waste and recycling from, and I'm assuming that would then extend to green waste, or maybe not if the properties are too big, actually. But I guess I don't really know what the appetite is from the tinderbox community for curbside garbage collection. I don't think a petition with six people is representative. And I guess if we were to survey them, then I'm pleased to hear that they would be given letters, because the internet's not very good in tinderbox. But if Councillor Street's proposing an alternative, if this is lost, then I would be supportive of that, just because I don't actually know what the appetite is.
Councillor Fox.
I support the motion. I'm aware of many residents in the tinderbox region. A lot of them have got quite large properties and, as Councillor Westwood says, very steep driveways. And they also have a private contractor who already works in the area, so people who want their waste removed are already having it removed, I would imagine. Having such a small amount of signatures on a petition, I think, isn't indicative that there is a general wish for the rubbish to be removed. A lot of these residents have lived there for many, many years and have never approached me as a councillor wanting their rubbish to be removed. In fact, a lot of them have expressed their pleasure at not having to pay for waste to be removed. They can compost on their properties. They are able to dispose of their rubbish on their large properties, and it's not been raised in the past. And I'm not very happy with the answer to Councillor Street's question in terms of cost. We are trying to cost cut and save money, and to be spending money, and I'm not even sure how much it is, that's what concerns me, to petition, to ask people whether they want something they haven't actually asked for, unless the petitioners can come up with a significant number of signatures, I think we'd be wasting council's time, and we'll probably get a result saying, no, we don't want it, we don't want to pay for it, and why bother? So I support the motion as it stands. Thank you.
Councillor Mitchell.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Fox, for the understanding of the situation regarding tinderbox in the past, and that understanding that no residents have come forward with this matter, or perhaps it has been mixed in regards to their driveway situations and they enjoy getting rid of their rubbish on their own property or going to the tip by a private contractor. I do acknowledge that, but I also thank Councillor Street for putting forward an alternative motion in regards to this, because I did contact, I know probably 20 people, I think I was counting, in Tinderbox. So I personally sent a message to those people, and not one of them had received the survey. Not one of them knew about the survey. And there was definitely a mixed response in regards to what those people came back with as to whether they'd like it or not. One response was in regards to they actually like going to the tip shop to check out the tip shop. So I think it is a very mixed response in the community, but I do not feel that I can make a decision here tonight with a survey with zero responses and a survey with another limited number of responses. At Howden, we recently received a bin strap trial letter that came back with a little link to a survey on it. I hope that it wouldn't take too much of staff's time to send out, and it would be a small cost, but I think if we're to make a decision that we need to have a thorough understanding of what that is, and especially considering I did speak to a few people who had no idea that there was a survey or this conversation was about at council.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you very much, Mayor. I'd like to start by thanking Councillor Street for making that suggestion, and I will follow suit by supporting a foreshadowed motion if it if this were to fail. So my reasons for thinking this are that the proposed extension area is adjacent to a currently serviced area, and it's likely that the contractor would be able to provide a service to that area if required. There is no cost to council if the collection service is not extended, but equally, if council decided to extend the service, the costs to the council, the costs of the council's curbside waste and recycling services would be recovered by service charges and factored into council's annual budget. I'm aware, I'm cognizant to the points that Councillor Fox made, and I think they are good ones. I think it lends weight to the idea that we should at least ask the residents what they want and what they feel about it. But most importantly, even if there are some people who would prefer not to have it or some people who would prefer to have it, that's almost immaterial, because when you look at the environment section at 6.1, the following environmental benefits would accrue to the entire municipality and indeed the state were we to extend collection services wider than they're currently provisioned. So that is, we would reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, we would improve recycling rates and diversion of product to landfill, and we would discourage illegal littering. And I think that that's a jolly good thing to do. So I will be voting against this, and I hope that we can move Councillor Street's motion. Thank you.
Councillor Grace, would you like to sum up?
I'm quite happy with the debate. I thought it was a pretty good debate. So whatever the result is, I have no problem with it.
There you go. Jeez, you say some very wise things sometimes, Councillor Grace. Councillor Grace, sometimes. Councillor Fox. Moved by Councillor Grace, seconded by Councillor Fox. The motion is that Council resolve to take no further action as to an extension of the garbage and recycling service to the tinderbox area, and that the organisers of the petitions questions such be advised accordingly. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
Aye.
We will have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Grace, Councillor Fox, and those against, Councillor Street, Bastone, Reap, Westwood, Cordover, Midgley and Winter. The motion is lost. We move to a foreshadowed motion from Councillor Street, and he's got it ready to go. Councillor Street.
Mayor, I move that Council resolve to survey the 197 tenements in the tinderbox area to ascertain community willingness.
To adopt.
A council-managed garbage and recycling collection service.
Should also be green waste.
Garbage.
Oh, no, they probably wouldn't get green waste there, would they? It'd be too big. Anyway. Oh, yes, tenements. Just before we move on.
Would I be able to ask for staff's advice whether I've got that right?
Exactly. Mr. Reeves, is this in line with our, the way we would actually do it?
Through you, Mayor. So, just to explain, so normally when we get group requests like this, then we would go through this process, as I've outlined in this report, and it would never actually come into the council around, and the only reason it's come into the council around is it's come via a petition form, and the only reason why we've actually recommended the way we have at the moment is because the petition is sort of in some way done a pseudo sort of survey by itself. So in terms of the actual amended motion, that's fine in terms of what we do. So we would normally just go out there, survey all the different properties there. We would, out of those 197 tenements there, you would look at the majority, but you might have actually even cut it down further. That you might actually see there's pockets that are contiguous with the existing service there that you might actually be able to apply the service to. So there'd be a bit of a judgment call associated with that. But I think that makes it wide enough for us to actually deal with that.
Do we have to include green waste in this?
It will depend if there's any properties that would meet the criteria there. So there may be there may be a couple there. So they're not all large properties in that area there, so there might be a couple.
Can we call it waste, instead of garbage, could we call it waste and recycling collection service? Because then it covers garbage fine. And yeah. green waste?
Yep. So you just change garbage to waste. Thank you, Amanda. Yeah, why don't we just say survey the tenements in the tinderbox area? Well, because that's what the report said, Councillor Wright. That's the only reason that I used that word.
Ms. Morton, could you please delete the 197 number? Okay. Mover happy?
Yeah.
Just for the people watching at home on Facebook, the motion that Councillor Street is moving, because you can't see this, is that Council resolve to survey... Oh, they can see it. Oh, that's new. People at home can see our things now. That's good. See the screen. The screen. They couldn't before, I don't think. Anyway, moved by Councillor Street. Looking for a seconder. Councillor Fox. There you go. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I think I've said everything that needs to be said in relation to this motion in my speech on the former. Look, the only thing that I would say in addition is that this gives us the opportunity to get the results of the survey. We can then make an assessment about the results of the survey and all of the other matters that Mr. Reeves spoken about once we get the results of that survey, and I have no doubt that you'll come back to us with a report that outlines the pros and cons of extending the collection service as well as the results of the survey. So hopefully, well, I think that that's a good place for us to land, and I'm glad that that's where we have landed.
Okay. We'll set our bits. So the motion is moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Fox, is that Council resolve to survey the tenements in the tinderbox area to ascertain the community's willingness to adopt a council-managed waste and recycling collection service. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. We move on to... acknowledgement of traditional owners policy. Look for a mover and a seconder. Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Mitchell. Councillor Fox.
I think it's very good that we're formalising a situation that something we've been doing for a number of years now. And I think it's very important. And the only thing that I think it might be slightly off field, but there's no mention of the Aboriginal flag and the fact that we fly the Aboriginal flag. We're one of the first councils to have done that. And it does also acknowledge the Aboriginal people in our community, but it's not mentioned in the policy, and that's my only concern and question.
Did you want me to go get an answer?
Yes, please. Yes.
Mr. Smee...
through you, Mayor, I guess if we're talking about rolling our policy into the reconciliation plan, the issue of the flag and how that relates to our acknowledgement of traditional owners can also be incorporated as part of that process.
Thank you. And I also note that the recommended speech to acknowledge the traditional owners is quite different from the one that the current mayor uses. And I just wonder whether we should either modify the one in the policy or that the one that the mayor uses should be modified.
Good question. The one I use is actually copied from the Governor of Tasmania because I heard her do it and I thought it was really good, and I have discussed it with members of the Aboriginal community who agreed that it was the powerful statement. So I have used both. I started with the one that's in the policy, the one that was written down for me, and then amended it. I have had a discussion also about saying the same acknowledgement every meeting gets a bit the same, and I wondered if we could start using different ones, and I suppose that's something that we could cover in the policy, because, for example, NAIDOC week, for example, would be a time when we might use a slightly different acknowledgement. The most powerful acknowledgement or welcomes to country that I've heard have been the ones that are specific, and Ms. Wilcox does this well, actually tailors them to an event or to a place or something different. So that's something I'd like to do a bit better, and I think this policy will actually help us to do that, so that we're not just rolling out the same thing. I think if you hear the same thing every meeting, perhaps the meaning's lost, and we need to keep it up to date and different and keep people engaged with it.
Thank you. I appreciate that, because being a chairman of the King Brewer Bicycle Advisory Committee, for example, it's already printed in the document what I should say, and there ought to be some leeway, but I think we should be able to choose our speeches to suit the occasion rather than making them up as we go, because I think that would also be inappropriate. But I recommend this motion. Thank you.
Great. Next I have Councillor Westwood, then Councillor Bastone. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to check that if this policy is being replaced by a forthcoming Kimber Reconciliation Action Plan, that there will not be a time when we don't have a policy?
I'd actually forgotten that we had a traditional owners policy. I've just been doing it because that's what we do. Turns out we've been acting in accordance with the policy because that's been the practice. This role falls on me predominantly, or my representative at an event, and certainly from my perspective, we'll keep going. Mr. Smead, do you have anything to add to that?
Mayor, the intent is that once we have a reconciliation action plan in place, and that includes the intent of this particular policy, the policy will then become obsolete, and our commitment is very much framed within the reconciliation action plan, and there's no longer a requirement for us to have a policy. Our commitment will be through the standing agenda items that we have for our council meetings and our committees, but the intent is that the Reconciliation Action Plan is where our statement of commitment will exist henceforth.
Thank you. And just one further question. When can we anticipate the Reconciliation Action Plan coming to council?
Through you, Mayor, I'd suggest that will be in the new year.
Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. It's just being a little bit picky, but on the finance 5.1, it says there are no financial implications associated with this matter. But in the procedural on page 191, it says council shall meet the cost of conducting a welcome to country. So there are financial implications.
Understood.
So do we strike out that there are no financial implications?
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor. The issue we're considering is whether to continue with a policy or whether to include our acknowledgement of traditional owners within a reconciliation action plan. So in considering that matter, there's not a financial implication. Yes, I take your point, Councillor Bastone, that a welcome to country may well incur a cost, but in considering this particular item and what is recommended, there's not a particular financial implication. I guess that was what I was referencing when I wrote the report, in terms of the financial implications of what's been recommended as opposed to the detail currently within the policy.
Councillor Midgley and then Councillor Grace. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a note that I have seen that other councils and government and NGOs are sort of heading towards moving away from a policy and rather a reconciliation plan or an action plan and commitment to traditional owners, so it's great that we are stepping in that direction as well. I had a question in regards to the consultation process with the Aboriginal community and with the timeline. Was it December that Mr. Smee said? I'm just wondering at all how that's taking place and the conversations that we're having, or that sort of thing.
Ms. Wilcox.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. So I've been conducting the engagement with the community, being part of the community. It takes time, and I have spoken to quite a few people about it and if it's called a reconciliation action plan, because there are some concerns around that sort of terminology. So it's very much putting the community, involving and collaborating with the community on what our commitment to the traditional custodians looks like, and to today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community in Kingborough.
Thank you.
Councillor Grace.
I don't want to offend anyone, but I'm not over keen on this. When I first came to council 20 years ago, a prayer was said before the council meeting. It was only just lately, in the last 10 years when Councillor Berry was mayor, that was changed. And it's only the last few years we've acknowledged the traditional owners of the land. Well, I think I'm a traditional owner of the land too. No, I'm serious, and we have to be serious, as I said to the Aboriginal guy when he came here and talked to us about it. You talk about consultation. I've not heard anything. Ms Wilcox said, or Councillor Midley asked about the Aboriginal community. Well, what about us? So should this not go out to full public consultation before Mr Smee brings in place the former reconciliation action plan? I think that would be a most appropriate way to go.
Well, Councillor Grace, I think it would be disappointing if you didn't think that the most important stakeholder in this policy is our Aboriginal community, because I think they are. Absolutely.
I didn't say they weren't.
Well, that's why I said if that's what you thought.
I didn't say, have to still look at our European people too. And I mean, it's a two-way street, Mayor. Do we put an ex-premier up and say, well, I'm just exaggerating. I don't want to get into debates, but I'm just saying I disagree with it, so I'll vote accordingly, and that's how to be, because of my own personal reasons.
Okay, thanks. Well, I think I'll get to it when I'll make a contribution now. I've missed who was next, I'm sorry, but I'll go to Councillor Cordova, then Councillor Reet. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. We're in a time and place in history where we need to be respectful, mindful, and we need to recognise that we are only here but for land that was taken from the traditional custodians of Lutruwita. And I want to proceed with that sensitivity, with that acknowledgement of history, and I want to welcome truth-telling, and that requires an acknowledgement of country, and it also requires an acknowledgement of how we got to this place where we currently are, and we'll never be able to move forward together without that truth-telling. So I do welcome an acknowledgement of traditional owners policy. I think it's a good step forward, and I'm happy to watch as it develops with the proper engagement with the people whom it most affects. But it also affects all of us, because the reason why we pay respect to elders past, present and emerging is because sovereignty was never ceded. And so a question that I had was, with respect, did we, in discussing this policy, did we ever think about the notion that sovereignty was never ceded, and was that a concept that was discussed for inclusion or exclusion from this acknowledgement of policy?
My recollection, but I'm happy to be corrected by Mr Smee, is that it was actually Councillor Richard Atkinson who brought a notice of motion to Council in around 2015 and said we ought to be acknowledging traditional owners at the start of the Council events, in particular at these Council meetings. And so it was really from that perspective, starting with nothing, with no acknowledgement
and that was a great first step. But I'm not sure whether we went to the depths of, to that sort of level, and I think that's what this, what we're proposing to do now is to go a step further in terms of what we're doing. Mr. Smee, have I covered that okay? Would you like to add something?
No, you're absolutely correct in your recollection.
Councillor Reid.
I wasn't going to speak, but I've been moved to speak by the comments by Councillor Grace. And I will say it briefly, and that is I am very offended by the comments that he has made tonight in relation to us not needing this policy of acknowledgement of the past custodians of this land. And I'm going to leave it at that because I'm supposed to be remaining calm in the foreseeable future, but I find it deeply offensive.
Question. It seems then I'm not allowed to point my own views out. I'm not pointing them out personally.
Okay.
I know heaps and heaps of people that will support me, and I know there's a lot that won't. So, Councillor Reid.
Councillor Grace, you said you were going to ask a question. You haven't. And just to point out, you said it seems you're not allowed to express your views. We actually sat silently and let you express your views. And because other councillors haven't spoken, Councillor Cordova, Reid and now Street are responding. I think I expect Councillor Street might be responding to your view. So we've sat quietly and listened to what you had to say, and now I expect Councillor Street will be afforded the same opportunities to put his views on the topic. Councillor Street.
Mayor, like Councillor Reid, I didn't think that I was going to have to speak on this motion this evening because I thought that it was an absolute fait accompli that around this table we would accept that an acknowledgement of traditional owners is an appropriate thing for council to do. There is simply no doubt that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have suffered significant inclusion since colonisation. And as a body in governance of land that is not traditionally ours in any meaningful way, that we would acknowledge the traditional owners and the elders of this land, past, present and emerging. As I said, I thought that we were at a point where that would simply be a fait accompli. Clearly I was wrong and I was moved to speak on the matter and I hope that it will be the last time that we have to have a conversation like this.
Look, I very similar to what Councillor Street has said, but I feel like I can't let it go now without saying something. I think that we have a long way to go in all of this, and my understanding of our traditional owners has been greatly enhanced by this position that I sit in, not just as mayor, but also before that as councillor, and I am embarrassed at the lack of knowledge that I had before I started on this council, particularly about our local Aboriginal community, but also about our statewide Tasmanian Aboriginal community. And what I would like to do, one of the things I'd like to do in the next couple of years, and it sounds like I'm supported by colleagues here, is to not only learn more myself and change my behaviour, but also help our community to better understand our own history, and not just the history of the last 200 or so years, but the history of 40,000 years or longer. When I hear things like Dr. Brown discovered Brown's River, and I heard that throughout my learning at school and living in this area, and now I grimace when I hear it because he didn't discover that area. It had been here for many, many years before. And as I learn, I'm finally, after living here for most of my life, actually understanding better, but I can still improve. And I think this council, without pushing it, without doing anything, I don't think anything controversial, we can play a role and a leadership role going forward, and that's what I think we've heard most councillors say, and I hope that this will be endorsed tonight because I think it's a really important thing for us to do, and I'm really pleased to see this motion coming up through our council staff and taking that extra step on top of the acknowledgement of traditional owners to doing something much more. Councillor Fox, to sum up.
I think it's been a very significant debate tonight, and thank you to all contributors, and I recommend the motion. Thank you.
The motion was moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Midgley, and it's the Council's acknowledgement of traditional owners policy being incorporated within the forthcoming development of a Kingborough Reconciliation Action Plan. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? We'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Street, Bastone, Reet, Westwood, Fox, Cordova, Midgley and Winter, and those against, Councillor Grace. The motion is carried. Next item is the Kingston Park Implementation Report from October 2020. It's on page 225, the recommendation, that is. Would anyone like to move or second that? Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. The Kingston Park Implementation Report is part of a series of reports that comes to Council and to inform us in regards to any updates. I appreciate that the updated sections are highlighted in yellow, so it makes us easy to have a look at. Mind you, I did actually read the whole report again just as a refresher because the agenda was quite small this time, but it definitely does give us provide us with an update in regards to the timeline, what's been happening in regards to Kingston Park, financial information, and as we can see in the highlighted parts, there's information in regards to the council is now obtaining further traffic modelling advice that will assist in upgrading a number of road intersections within the CBD. Some of the other highlighted bits are that the reception area, we've got council staff there now during normal business hours. We've also looking at the co-working space that's been reviewed post COVID-19 pandemic, and they're looking at options for it could be suitable as a meeting room for local groups, training and small conferences. Also, the sad news that the playground won't be opening as per the targeted time, that it will be anticipated to be early 2021. Let's all hope, fingers crossed. I know I get excited when I drive past and see all the big sculptures and swings and potential things that are going to be there. Look forward to dropping my kids there and going shopping. But they're old enough to do that. Saying for the record. I don't advise anybody else to do that. So what else have we got there? The car park that came to council in regards to that, adjacent to the playground, and we've had input in regards to that matter. I just had a couple of questions. And I feel a bit embarrassed, sorry, by that comment. I'm very much into child safety, I just want to say, and do not leave your children at the playground. Mine are nearly teenagers. I noted at a recent council agenda that we discussed separated bikeways and bike lanes, and I'm just wondering at all, that wasn't mentioned in this updated report. Does it need to be at all?
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the chair, no, I don't think so. It's not something we've actually turned our mind to or made any decisions in regard to that at this stage. So this report is really just giving you an update as to where the project is at in terms of the work that's been done or is about to be done. In terms of the bike lanes and bike access, there's been no specific investigations or work which has been done over the last 3 months since the last report was produced.
Thank you. And a question I asked at the last council meeting in regards to a marketing for the Kingborough Hub. I personally would like to see, like, we make some great videos at council that are promoted on our Facebook page. It would be great to see a video done in regards to the Kingborough Hub to showcase all the rooms and things like that, because I still think people are really not aware of the facilities that are available. Miss Wilcox, I think she makes the videos, so fantastic at that. It would be great to see a video promotion of the hub, I guess, as part of our marketing suite, because we do, well, I personally would like to see that as a utilised space. It does create revenue for council, and I think we really need to kind of bump that up a bit. So I don't know if at all that could be considered as part of the marketing future of the hub.
Yes, no, that's quite possible. With the completion of the rectification works over there in the next week, then staff will be moving into the hub on a more permanent basis, so they'll certainly be looking at activating the space from this weekend. So all sorts of marketing and promotion activities will occur, and I'm sure that something like that is quite possible.
Thank you. And in regards to the equipment, I guess the audio equipment and the different equipment that was purchased for the hub, so when you're hiring, do you get a list of the different equipment that's in there? How much money was sort of spent in regards to purchasing of the equipment? Do we have a list of what is actually there available for groups to use?
Through the chair, this report is more about Kingston Park as a project. A lot of the how the hub will operate into the future is not really part of the Kingston Park project. We sort of draw a line from when we complete the construction and we hand it over to other the operational components of the staff within community services and things like that. So really what as I prepare this report, it's about what the Kingston Park project is delivering. How we then manage the community hub into the future is more of an operational matter, which is managed, and that would be the subject of a separate report. That said, all of those sorts of things can be reported on in regard to the future activities that are being planned, and I think that's where there's probably an opportunity to brief councillors in much more detail in terms of how the hub will be marketed, how it'll be used, what sort of a program of activities we've got planned into the future, things like that. You won't get all that level of detail in this report because it's more about the building and the construction and those sorts of activities which are happening on the site, but certainly there's an opportunity to provide all that sort of information in the next coming months, I'd say.
Thank you. And my next question could be related to that as well. I note the lease of the cafe by Traders in Purple. Was there a... And again, due to COVID, I understand that lease is probably at question. Did we have a time frame for that? And if so, what that was? And then what are we going to be looking at for the future?
Through the chair, yes, that's a very interesting question. There's actually a draft report prepared for the next council meeting on that particular matter, so rather than trying to jump in and answer everything that that report provides, because it's quite complicated, I'd prefer to leave that detail for the next meeting for you to consider. In regard to the lease, they have requested an extension, so that report will consider that matter and allow the council to decide what sort of extension is appropriate.
Great, thank you.
Didn't write down who was next, so I'm going to take a stab. It was Councillor Bastone and Councillor Cordova. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you very much, Mayor. On page 208, where it says the playground was originally going to be open by the end of 2020, but it's been impacted by COVID, the play sculptures being created by Agency Sculpture are nearly finished, but they're unable to be delivered and installed due to the border closures. Now, we know that things are coming in and out of the state all the time, as are workmen. And if we don't have the workmen that can install them here, the workmen can get a permit to come over here. I just find that a very strange thing that we are waiting on something which is finished or nearly finished in Victoria. That's my first question.
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the chair, yes, my understanding is that the works have been finished. They're due to be finished in about the middle of October. We have sought permission for the people to come over. Haven't been categorised as critical workers. They haven't passed that criteria, which is reasonably stringent, as I understand. And there's also insurance issues in relation to them actually installing their own works. They are very much a sculptures that they have worked themselves. They can't pass it on to other tradesmen to install. They have to transport them over on special trucks and install them themselves because they are familiar with them. They're very large pieces, but no, they've they haven't been able to get the permission to come over early, and they have attempted to do that. The applications have been made, but they've been refused, as I understand. And as well as that, yes, it's not something that they can just send them all over on in shipping containers and expect somebody else to put them up. It's for two reasons. One is that they are, that they're the ones that are familiar with it. The other other reason is the insurance issue.
Okay, so can I ask if we will continue to apply to get them across? The rest of our the borders are going to be open, hopefully, to everyone but Victorians from the 26th, so we're going to have more and more shipping coming across. So will we continue to do the application, or will we just sit and leave it, considering the way Victoria's borders might never be opened?
It might be semantics a little bit, but the council isn't applying for them to get the relaxation of the border controls. That, as I understand, the company itself has applied. Council hasn't applied or provided any support to that application at this stage. But in terms of the company, Mr. Ferrier?
Through the chair, I guess they can apply again. It's a bit hard to expect that they would... You know, they don't meet the criteria, but then they apply again, they do meet the criteria. There's no reason why they can't apply again, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. And when you're doing the separate report on the hub functions, can we have a look at the non-use of the shared business facility area, or whether... considering that we have had the hub out of action for some time and that area not being able to use, and during this time another one has set up in John Street which has been particularly successful, so should we be looking at how much money we have lost because of this and being able to claim back against the contractors that are repairing the cement?
It's not actually in the report, is it, Mr. Ferrier? Is that in the report?
Through the chair. It's alluded to in the report, but I think that's something which would be in that next report. We'd consider in terms of the change of use from a co-working space to something else. That's something which would need, the feasibility of an alternative use would need to be examined in more detail, and I think that's what a subsequent report would do, and how we would use all the spaces within the hub to their maximum effect, yes.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I just have a question about acoustics in the multi-purpose hall, and I'm aware, obviously, that this report that we're dealing with here is just dealing with what is being currently... they're delivering, but I'm asking a question about what has already been delivered. So, on page 202, it talks about the good acoustics in the multi-purpose hall. I have heard concerns about the acoustics in the multi-purpose hall. I'm just wondering whether what has been delivered is the end of the story, or whether we can anticipate getting some better acoustics in the multi-purpose hall.
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the chair, look, I guess that reference to good acoustics is in regard to a whole lot of other things as well, and that was incorporated as part of the design of the hub originally. If that hasn't turned out to be the case, and I'm not aware of any specific problems, but if that hasn't turned out to be the case, then yeah, we'll have to look at that and make some adjustments.
Question, Mayor, with acoustics of the hall, I read an email sent to you from a Mrs. Regarding her son that's out of work and sitting in his on his backside, and offered his time free of charge to this council to come and look at any of the statistics issues you have, because that's his profession, and he'd be more than happy to talk to Mr. Ferrier and give him, and he's a very qualified person, I understand, Margaret Heddle, Mrs. Heddle's son.
You're quite right, and I'm sorry if I haven't communicated this to our staff before, but I think all of us citizenship ceremonies, I'd nearly every time get a comment from a member of the public to say I couldn't hear a word you were saying the whole time. I was sitting in the back seat, so I think there are some issues in there to tackle, and we did get that offer, so I'll speak to Mr. Speen or Mr. Ferrier.
If you haven't got the email, ring me and I'll give you the number.
I remember exactly and the response as well. Okay, are there any other... Councillor Midgley?
One more question in regards to the acoustics. Did we purchase curtain... I know we're going on to the hub, but it is important. Did we purchase curtains to assist with acoustics and some other acoustic things?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, yes. The curtains that have been recently purchased were very much aimed at improving the acoustics, because the feedback we got from the initial events we had there that the acoustics weren't great. So those curtains have gone in the past couple of months, but of course we haven't been able to have an event yet to determine whether they are successful. In relation to the offer from Mr. Heddle, I met with him last week. He is going to do an assessment of both the Taruna Hall and the Kettering Hall. And once he's completed them, if indeed we do have further issues with the acoustics at the hub, I'm hoping it wouldn't be stretching the friendship too far to ask him to have a look at that as well. However, the point he did make out when I met with him is that acoustics are quite a complex issue, and they very much, the acoustic attenuation treatments very much need to be targeted to a particular factor that you are trying to address. He said there is no one treatment that will give you perfect acoustics across a whole range. What's good for a rock concert might be terrible for a meeting. So we do need to keep that in mind, that the hub being a venue that does have a variety of uses, there will be some events where the acoustics are excellent, and there'll be some where they're not so good.
Okay, Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up? Motion is that the Kingston Park Implementation Report from October 2020 be noted. Moved by Councillor Midgley, second by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Congratulations, Councillor Grace. You voted for Kingston Park. Okay. Next one is confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. In accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulation 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation minutes and applications for leave of absence. Mover and seconder, please. Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. That means that the open session of Council is adjourned at 7:17 p.m. Thanks to everyone at home for watching tonight via Facebook. We always enjoy your company. We'll be back with you in 2 weeks' time, which is Monday the 26th of October from 5:30 p.m. We hope you can tune in again. And remember, if you have a question you'd like to put on notice, it's kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Address your email to the General Manager as a question on notice, and it will be answered in the next agenda. Have a good night.